Thanks for listening to the Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
What up? Welcome in. This is the Herd. Wherever you may be and however you may be making this part of your day, thanks so much. I'm Doug Gottlieb, in for Colin Cowherd. You know, Colin has a theory. He's got lots of theories. Actually, they're hypotheses. But he has a hypothesis or a theory or whatever that the truth is there are no carryovers from one game to the next. I don't believe that to actually be true. We've seen players come apart because of failures in the playoffs. The most notable one is Nick Anderson. Okay? So here's what happened with Nick Anderson. And first, Nick was a player at Illinois, and he was a great player, part of the Flying Illini. They had pro after pro after pro. Okay? Pro after pro after pro. In 1995, the Rockets were trailing the Orlando Magic in game one of the NBA Finals. So what you know is, and I think some of it you know because of The Last Dance, you know that Michael Jordan came off a baseball field, played under number 45 with Chicago Bulls. He didn't look sharp, and he turned the ball over. They lost the Orlando Magic. He just didn't play great, and they lost the Orlando Magic in the playoffs after a year and a half away from the game. The Magic were loaded. Right? They had Penny Hardaway. They had Shaq. They had Nick Anderson. Dennis Scott, like they had a squad. That would have been a squad in any generation. Any generation. It was before Penny's body let him down, before Shaq was crazy athletic, and they had plenty of shooting. And oh yeah, by the way, versatile players. Nick Anderson was a 70% free throw shooter during the season. 8.5 seconds to go. He misses one, he misses the second. Clyde Drexler gets the rebound. And they go down and score. So now it's a one-point game. They foul Nick Anderson again. They're playing at home. Playing at home. He missed another one. Back rim. Then another one. Back rim. Back rim is usually the sign of those aren't bad misses. Kenny Smith hits a three. Ties the game at 110, sends the game to overtime. And remember, the Magic led by 20 and had a four-point lead with 8 seconds to go. They lose to the Rockets 120-118. Now, in fairness, it wasn't all about Nick Anderson, right? It just wasn't. There's so many things that lead to a loss, especially one like that you can't just simply blame it on one guy. But I need you to keep this in mind. That was 94-95. Nick Anderson shot 70% from the line. The next year, he shot 69% from the line, but he struggled with consistency. The following year, okay, he went from 16 a game to 14.5 a game to 12 a game, and he became a 40% free throw shooter. He never really recovered. And he wasn't like he was an 87%, 90%. It wasn't like he was Mark Price at the line. But he was a good free throw shooter who got the yips. It affected his entire game. So you might think that I'm talking about Ben Simmons. I'm not. I'm talking about Paul George. Paul George didn't shoot well in game two, but then down the stretch, he carried the Clippers. With 8 seconds to go, after a review, they got the ball back. Paul George was an 87% free throw shooter. He gets fouled. And he didn't miss them badly. First one's around and out. Second one's back rim. Happens. But you can't call for the ball, demand the ball, have the team run a play to get you the ball. Then you miss two. And you're up one. It should have been up three. They could have fouled. Game essentially over. But here's what impressed me last night. Paul George played his best basketball, and he did not allow all the negativity that comes with blowing the game, missing two free throws, when you're the best player and a great free throw shooter, to carry over with him. Do people understand how hard that is? I'm sure that some of us have the ability to, and I have the ability, I think guys better than women sometimes, to, what's it called, when you put things in a little box, you know, when you don't, what is the music, what is the word I'm looking for? Compartmentalize, that's it, compartmentalize. But you're not actually compartmentalizing it if you just leave it. Like, he dragged that thing over to the trash and then emptied the trash and then just went out and hooped. 27, 15, and 8 assists. The most impressive thing last night was Paul George bouncing back from that. The other parts of the game, which is it's simple, but it's complex. Everyone's assumption is, hey, the Suns went 2-0, and they did so without Chris Paul. Now, keep in mind, Chris Paul hadn't played in 11 days. But still, Chris Paul's style of play is a great on-ball defender. He's tough. He's smart. He's a tremendous passer. And by now, he knows his game and knows his limits. So you would think you add Chris Paul to a team that went up 2-0, and you free up more shots for Devin Booker. You free up more shots for DeAndre Ayton because he's the guy who sets the table. And what happened? They were worse. Chris Paul couldn't buy a bucket, 5 of 19 from the floor, 23%, 15 points, a minus 15. Here's Chris Paul talking about the loss after the game.
They outplayed us tonight. We didn't make shots. You could tell they had, you know, a lot more energy. I got to be better. I shot terrible. I got to pick up the pace. We'll be ready game four.
Yeah, we'll be ready game four. But we'll pick up the pace. Cameron Payne was playing with much greater pace. But I think a part of it is sports and basketball specifically. It is not a math problem. It's just not. Like baseball really is kind of, there's a lot of math to it. Like baseball, the thinking is, all right, well, look, we got a left-handed hitter up. Let's go. We got a pitcher, lefty-lefty matchup. The pitcher gives up ground balls, right? So we're going to move the infield over to where he's going to hit the ground balls to the right side, to the left side of the field, whatever the numbers tell us. And based upon the math, that's where we're. Basketball is not like that. It's just not. It's not addition by addition. Sometimes it's addition by subtraction or subtraction by addition. That's what it was for the Suns last night. How many times have you heard people use the transitive property in sports and it doesn't work out? Well, you know. Look what the Suns, and what they were able to do to the Denver Nuggets. And the Nuggets, well, they were able to beat the Clippers last year. So, the Suns beat the Nuggets, the Nuggets beat the Clippers. Well, then the Suns should beat the Clippers. That's the old transitive properties of A equals B and B equals C, then A must equal C. That's not the way sports works. It's not 2 is greater than 1, then we add 3 is greater than 1. Well, no. Sometimes there's actually a subtraction with addition. And the easiest case to make for that is last night, Chris Paul, who, and if you guys, you don't have to know me. You don't have to understand this about me. I am a huge Chris Paul fan. When Chris Paul got hurt with the Clippers, I was the one saying if he didn't get hurt, they might have won the whole thing. When he got hurt with the Rockets, same thing. Chris Paul is point God. But addition is not always addition, and subtraction is not always subtraction. And the easiest way to see that is last night. The same thing is true for the Clippers. The Clippers shouldn't be this far without Kawhi Leonard. And it doesn't mean that Kawhi Leonard is a bad player, an overrated player. They're outside of Kevin Durant, I don't think there's a player in the NBA I would rather have. I mean that. Plays both ends. Okay? He's becoming a better passer. He's not a great passer. He can score in the post. He can score in the mid-range. Filthy. And he can hit threes. He's not afraid of the big moment. He's a two-time finals MVP. Yeah, he misses some regular season games. And now he may have a torn ACL. We don't know. It's really weird. They haven't ruled him out yet. But I'm just telling you, I love his game. They shouldn't be better without him. But there's something to teams and how they match up differently and how players elevate their games when they get more touch. Over an 82-game season, you're going to be better with Kawhi Leonard than you'd be without. Over a long playoff, you're going to be better with than without. But sometimes matchups favor you. Sometimes momentum favors you. Sometimes emotionally, you're better when you're down a guy. You know? You're better when you're down a guy. Coming up next, the Pistons have the number one overall pick. Number one overall pick in the NBA draft. Have they decided already who they're taking? And how do they change? I mean, look at these teams. The Hawks were a laughingstock a couple years ago. The Suns have been bad for almost a decade, right? The Clippers, the Clippers, and I don't need to say more. Obviously, they've been good here for a good stretch of time, but they're a historically terrible franchise. The Bucks, people forget that the Bucks, not long ago, bottomed out. That's how they rebuilt this franchise. How did the Pistons do that? We'll ask their head coach, Dwayne Casey. He joins us next in The Herd.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app. Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Doug Gottlieb in for Colin. This is The Herd, Fox Sports Radio. Casper's 4th of July sale is here. They're celebrating the bed, white and blue, with up to 30% off bundles, mattresses, and more. Enjoy some of our best products for one great price when you shop the best-selling bundle. Exclusions apply. See casper.com/promo for offer details and end date. Let's talk some NBA hoop as we come off of a Clippers win. They're now down 2-1 in the Western Conference Finals. The Bucks try to even the Eastern Conference Finals tonight against the Atlanta Hawks. And a guy who has experienced the Eastern Conference Finals when he was the head coach of the Toronto Raptors is now the head coach of the Detroit Pistons. He's Dwayne Casey. He joins us in The Herd. I'm Doug Gottlieb filling in. Coach, how are you?
Hey, Doug. How you doing, buddy?
I'm good. It's good to catch up on radio. Got to do it in person sometime soon.
I know it.
Let's stick with the Eastern Conference, obviously, because you've been there for long enough as a head coach, two different teams. Between game one and game two, I think here's a question that people always wonder. Why in the NBA playoffs are the adjustments made in between games, not at halftime?
Well, I think there's subtle adjustments, Doug, that are made at halftime. I just don't think they're as profound as we may think. It may be playing a particular player more minutes in the second half. I don't know if, you know, some teams, if you're a veteran team, I would say like Milwaukee, you could do a little bit more as far as adjustments concerned. But the younger the team, probably the less dramatic or profound adjustments or changes you can make, whether it's a changing of the defense or if we're going to, you know, play more zone or whatever, things like that. So, you know, I know it seems like that a lot of there, and again, it depends on what team, how smart your team is. Some guys can't make that adjustment that quickly if it's a huge adjustment, a huge change. So most of the playoff, most teams right now in the playoffs will do something subtle, more so than profound, for the second half.
When you were in Toronto and you took on the Cavs, you guys had a home court advantage. Is that a good thing? Did you feel like it? I mean, I guess you wondered if it adds to the pressure of the situation that there's an expectation that of home court advantage.
And it goes back to the same thing. At that time, we were a little bit of a veteran team. We had been together for a while. At that time, there was pressure because we felt like that was our year. I think we won 59 or 60 games that year. So we felt like that was the year we were going to get Cleveland. And if you remember, Doug, that game we had three cracks at it to win the game with like 5 seconds to go in the game. We get game one because Cleveland had just come from a tough series against Indiana.
Indiana, right? It's game seven, yeah.
Right, and game seven in Indiana. So we almost get game one. The series is over. I mean, well, we have a better chance of getting the series, or at least not, you know, being as tough. So we had an opportunity that year, but again, you're exactly right. If you're not a veteran team, a team that can handle pressure under those circumstances, that first game at home is pressure, you know, as far as pressure to win, pressure to get over the hump. And when you don't get it, it's very difficult to get it back. And that's going to be interesting to see how Milwaukee bounces back from that, because they're, you know, from the two teams tonight in Atlanta and Milwaukee, Milwaukee is the one with more pressure. Right now, Atlanta's playing with free money.
Yep.
They're playing with house money. They're having fun. You know, they don't have the expectations that Milwaukee has.
I mean, the perfect example of it is Trae Young comes off a ball screen and throws an alley-oop off the backboard. Like, you know, in an Eastern Conference final game in the second half, you're like, what? Like, if that's
exactly.
not if that's not playing free and easy, I don't know what is.
Right. And Doug, knowing Nate, I coach Nate and coach with Nate in Seattle, I know that's not something that Nate's professing or preaching, is alley-oop off the backboard. So, again, like you said, they're having fun. They're free and easy. They're a very talented young team. So the pressure right now, they're not feeling the pressure that Milwaukee's feeling, because they don't know what they don't know.
It's a great point. They don't know what they don't know. Bud has been a guy, Mike Budenholzer's been a guy who he kind of, it's like that old school basketball. And obviously, you know, you as a great player, you remember kind of the older school basketball is like, hey, we do what we do well, and they got to stop us.
Right.
And like, well, I don't, that drop coverage and playing a big, like, I don't know. You've coached against Bud a lot in Atlanta, in Milwaukee. How apt to change do you feel like he is?
Well, again, it goes back to our original conversation, Doug. I think if you have time, days between games and days to get into ready for a team that's playing drop coverage, and you have shooters that can space the floor, and the same thing happened, I thought, to Utah, that they space the floor and you go small. You may not go small the entire season. But if you have time to prepare to play with a small lineup the way that the Clippers did against Utah, and now the way Atlanta's doing versus Milwaukee, you can exploit some of the matchups. You can get Lopez in rotation and where he has to get out to the corner. If I remember correctly, they didn't play him a lot in the fourth quarter in that first game. So, you know, it's difficult. They've had a lot of success. They're very talented. Bud's a very good coach. But playoffs is about having the tools to be able to exploit matchups in certain situations. But you got to have the tools to do it, and Atlanta has the tools. John Collins, I think, is playing terrific basketball.
Yep.
Huge rebounding.
And the rebounding, I thought the rebounding was really – everybody's talking about Trey – but the offensive rebounds, as they're
exactly.
and for people who don't understand what's changed with the NBA, and you've been through so many different generations of it, it's not just the 3-point shooting, but the offense is so spread out that when a shot goes up, like John Collins is outside the 3-point line, he's got a running start at the rebound, and you're underneath in the lane. That's even harder for a box out, and Milwaukee, frankly, missed some of those box outs.
Doug, that is exactly right. Offensive rebounding with a spread, with a small, you say, well, they don't have the size. Well, you don't need it when you're attacking them from behind. You crashing the boards from the corners. You know, again, it's one of those things where, like you said, you're spaced out. They don't see you. Most players don't turn and look to see where the offensive rebounders are coming from. There are a lot of long rebounds when you're a three-point shooting team, and I thought that was a difference in Atlanta the other night. Trey, what, he scored 2 buckets or 2 points from the field in the fourth quarter, and the rest of them were free throws. So it wasn't really Trey. He was causing problems, but it was the offensive rebounding, the rebounding numbers that I thought won the game the other night.
Dwayne Casey joining us, the head coach of the Detroit Pistons. I do want to get to your franchise and your team and the great news that you're going to get the number one overall pick in a moment. In the Western Conference, and you've been through this before, I believe in that last series against the Cavs, it was trying to figure out end of game adjustment against LeBron James, and you're trying to figure out, all right, do we put a big in? Do we not put a big in? And they end up going full court instead of going to the sideline. Right. All right, take me through from your perspective as a coach. Ty Lue decides to put DeMarcus Cousins on the basketball, puts Zubac on DeAndre Ayton. They decide to not switch, and then Monty draws up a perfect play that they execute. From the coach's perspective, what would you do differently if you got a second chance at what happened to Ty Lue?
Well, here's what I would do is and again, DeMarcus, I don't know what was in his mind or what he was told to do, but if you noticed him in that timeout, I mean, on that pass, he was straight up and down the court instead of taking an angle to take away the sight line of that of the rim. So if he gets to the side, jumps up and down like he's going crazy, trying to time the pass, he was just like, you know, kind of standing there. So it was an easy pass. He was an easy pass for Crowder to the rim. And the other thing, if woulda, coulda, shoulda, if you could switch, even though it's a small and a big, if you could get just in his path just to slow him up just enough where you disrupt the timing on the lob, again, it's easier said than done, you know, because I give you an example in that situation. You mentioned it with LeBron James. He went full court because in the timeout, we specifically told Pascal, we want to trap. We want to trap LeBron. As soon as the ball goes to him, go and trap him. If Kevin Love brings the ball up the floor and tries to go coast to coast, we'll live with that because I think you can catch back up. So lo and behold, when it goes into LeBron, Pascal, his instincts told him to take off with Kevin Love. And so that left whoever was guarding LeBron alone one-on-one. So Pascal's a young player, you know, young in the playoff experience situation. So, again, you can give all the adjustments you want, but, again, you're dealing with human nature and human beings, and that's, you know, we make mistakes. So that was the situation there, and I'm sure, you know, DeMarcus was told to get in that sight line where you disrupt that pass. It was a great play.
Yeah.
Jay Triano had run it before, and we had seen it before, and people forget there's no offensive goaltending on out of bounds play. So all you have to do is go up and throw it right, almost shoot the ball into the rim if you have a good look at it.
Yeah, at least 3 seconds of defending the middle, and then maybe you worry about the corner.
Exactly.
But he wasn't even really active on the play. That said, I felt like last night was the old addition, subtraction by addition, right? Like, I love Chris Paul. If I could have been like Chris Paul, I would have played in the NBA, right? There's so many things he does. But he kind of screwed up how they were playing. How do you navigate that, manage that as a coach where you have a great player, but we're already rolling, and it kind of changed the way Phoenix played?
Well, you know, again, you know, you want to play Chris, but again, you almost have to save guys from themselves. He's such a warrior. He's such a great leader. He's been a great leader for that team the entire year. But the problem is, you know, he's been in COVID protocol for how many days? The guys probably hasn't played 2-on-2, 3-on-3, 4-on-4 at all. So that's the situation he's in. But then what throws another wrench in the situation is campaign goes down, so he's hurt. So his minutes probably got extended more than what Monty wanted to play him. So it's a tough situation. I still will ride with Chris Paul because he brought us to the dance. And even though they played well without him in that first two games, you still need Chris Paul to win. So tough situation, but I really get how Monty was probably thinking in that moment or that game.
Dwayne Casey, our guest. Okay, so you get the number one overall pick. what's that feeling like?
It's great. I tell you, I probably made a fool out of myself, Doug. There's a video going around that my wife took that I jumped up and was cheering like I won the championship, in which, you know, we got the number one pick because you don't get that too many times in your career, and it's just great for our organization. You know, we retooling, restoring a really proud franchise here in Detroit. So it's one of those things where it's just something good that's happened for our organization. You know, we lost Blake, we lost Reggie Jackson, lost Andre, and so we're trying to retool that talent pool to get to where those guys are now. And it takes talent. You can X and O all you want to, and if you don't have talent, and that's what Troy Weaver has done, an excellent job of bringing in the right people. We got a good young group, and just to add a number one pick or add more talent to that base. Is really, really exciting for our organization.
How close are you to deciding who you want to pick?
Well, we're going to keep our options open. You know, we've had 2 months to prepare and watch a lot of college game tapes of all these guys and see them. But we're going to keep our options open, Doug. And we have to. If the right situation comes along and, you know, you put yourself in that position with the number one pick and you're in the catbird seat. So we're going to look at all our options. We're doing our homework. We're doing all the attention to detail things you do to make a correct draft pick. And again, the top four guys are really, really exciting players. And so I don't know if you can go wrong and probably one or two above the others, but if you get any of the four of them, you've got a good pick.
If I told you one of them reminds a lot of people, he reminds me a little bit more of Penny Hardaway, but some people say Grant Hill, of course, is a great player in Detroit. Is that a fair?
I would agree with you. I would agree. That's a fair assessment. I totally agree. I know who you're talking about. I can't talk about him, but I agree with you.
I don't know if you can't talk about him. It's generally like, well, you don't talk about one guy, whatever, because they're not property of any
another
team. Right.
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
So,
but
we know who we're talking about. Is that
there you go?
Penny, Grant Hill, like those are two pretty good comparisons that you think they're appropriate.
Two Hall of Fame guys, and you take that anytime you have an opportunity with it. But again, we're going to keep our options open and do our due diligence and on all the top players in that situation. But that assessment is a really, really good assessment.
How hard is it, or maybe not hard, what is it like for you to go to work in this process? Considering when you were in Toronto, you guys were this close to winning a championship, and obviously they won a championship. You're this close, but
right.
I just wonder, because you're looking at, look, Milwaukee bottomed out a couple years ago and look where they are.
Right.
Phoenix
mm-hmm.
bottomed out and look where they are. Atlanta bottomed out and look where they are. Right. There's obviously Philadelphia's bottomed out. But in the moment, what is it like to actually go to work and you're watching all these other teams compete for, and I was just there. I was competing for a championship a couple years
right.
ago. What's that like for you?
Well, it's exciting, first of all, and I think, again, to you, the teams you talked about, is so important to get the right mix. The chemistry, the guys that fit, the team that fits, the skill set that fits, Doug, is so important, because you can get a lot of the same guys and you're going to have mush as far as a team is concerned. But if you get the right pieces, and that's what we're trying to do, is get the right fit, the right temperament, the right skill set that fits. You can't have all five defensive players and think you're going to win. You can't have all five shooters. You got to have playmakers and defenders, and that's what we're trying to do, is get a championship fit. And Troy has done a good job with it. He understands talent. He knows talent, And, you know, he knows what we're looking for as a coaching staff, and what it takes to get to that level, we know. And so that's why, you know, we just don't want to, we want to make sure we dot our I's and cross our T's as far as when we make these decisions and put this team together. And it's exciting. And we go to work excited. And I think our organization excited. I think we sold probably over, I think in a 10-minute period after we got the first pick, $400,000 worth of tickets. So that's exciting for everybody. And the city of Detroit deserves it. It's a sports city. It's a great, proud franchise with 3 championships there. Ben Wallace gave us good luck the other night, Doug, with being at the lottery. He just made the Hall of Fame. So a lot of good things are going. So we have a little pep in our step going in every day and working. And our players are working to get better this summer. We got 2 guys on the USA Select team. Jeremy Grant just made the Olympic team. So some good things are happening now. We just got to put it all together and continue to grind and build and develop our young guys toward where these guys are playing tonight.
Dwayne, listen, have a wonderful summer. Always good to catch up with you. Look forward to doing so in person, and thanks so much.
Are you going to be at Summer League, Doug?
Yeah, of course I'm going to be at Summer League. I mean, that's
okay. I will see you at the Summer League.
Absolutely. It's like Nirvana. Thanks so much for joining us. Dwayne Casey, Total Glass Act, head coach, Detroit Pistons, joining us in the Herd. Let's get to Ryan Music with the news.
No. Turn on the news.
This is the Herd Line News.
Am I going to be at Summer League?
You know, Doug, I will basketball say, I've never been to Detroit. I'm not sure when I will be going to Detroit. I have no connections to Detroit. I might have just become a Pistons fan because of that interview with Dwayne Casey. What a great guy.
He's a wonderful guy.
Yeah.
Wonderful. And if you know, we don't have time for it, but if you know anything about his coaching story, like there's a guy who, you know, was a star on the rise. And then when he was assistant under my head coach, Eddie Sutton in Kentucky, that thing fell apart. He had to rebuild it, and he's built himself an incredible reputation in the NBA.
Absolutely. Well, we're going to talk a little Major League Baseball here, Doug. Tack, stick 'em, whatever you want to call it. Rosin with sunscreen has obviously been the big topic of discussion throughout the week in Major League Baseball as they've started to crack down on the use of foreign substances. Well, the commissioner of Major League Baseball, Rob Manfred, talked to The Athletic about the rolling out of this new protocols in which they check pitchers. And he said he thinks it's gone very well. We've had no ejections so far. Players in general have been extremely cooperative. The inspections have taken place quickly in between innings. Frankly, the data suggests that we are making progress with respect to the issues in spin rate that has caused for us to put these efforts into place. I understand the incident in Philadelphia. He's referring to what went down between manager Joe Girardi and Nationals pitcher Max Scherzer. It was less than ideal, but that was just one incident. We expect that we will continue as the vast majority of cases so far without that kind of incident, Doug. Everything going well, according to Rob Manfred.
Well, I mean, like, look, here's the deal. If you're going to get accused of illegal substances, you got to be like Shohei Ohtani. Just smile and take it as a compliment. Take it as a compliment. You're so good, you have to be doctoring a baseball to do it that way. Otherwise, you know, it's like if somebody says, like, hey, Ryan, you've been working out? Yes, I have. You look like you've been using steroids. If you're not using steroids, that's actually a compliment. Like, that means you look so strong that you had to be cheating in order to look that good.
Yes, Doug, I'm on the juice, actually. No, but you bring up a good point. It's mostly should be taken in stride. I know Colin earlier this week talked about it, and he said the optics of how this whole thing is unveiled has sort of been a black eye and not a great look for Major League Baseball, that there has been an issue that clearly needed addressing, but the way they've gone about it has not been great. Where are you at with that?
I mean, the undressing thing is funny. I mean, I just don't know. Like, again, guys hide things where they hide things.
Yeah. I tend to agree with you. I'm like, it was going to blow up early on just because players are always going to sort of push back, especially considering how contentious things have been between players in the league recently. But It's more so just like it's on the players that more than Major League Baseball. I'm not really sure what else they were supposed to do. You know, clearly something needed to be done. Has it been perfect? Probably not, but it's also, you know, hasn't been the end of the world. All right, we'll wrap up here with a little bit of NFL, Doug, as Lamar Jackson, former MVP, is looking for his new contract. Ian Rappaport of the NFL Network reported that he still continues to go without an agent, which is obviously unique in the NFL. Not unheard of. You've seen some other players negotiate their own contracts, but he'll be, I believe, the first sort of major star quarterback to continue on without an agent. This was a bit of a topic of discussion when he entered the draft. Him and his mom were...
Nobody can get a hold of him. People couldn't get a hold of him for workouts.
Yeah, his mom has been his main point of representation. But apparently, as he looks for that first major extension, he will continue on without an official agent. His mom will be his representation. One report had suggested that he was looking for the middle ground between more than Dak Prescott, but less than Patrick Mahomes. So that would come in somewhere in the low $40 million per year range.
Boy, I mean, I would not go without an agent. I think that's a major mistake. That kind of money, you know, especially the structuring of these deals, there's too much at stake.
Yeah, and this is not to take anything away from agents, because there is a lot of nuance that still goes into those rookie deals, because, you know, I mean, we saw it. I think it was it Joey Bosa? Hey, we see it every couple of years. There are like rookie contracts that almost kind of drag out into training camp, even though they're mostly straightforward because everything's slotted now post Sam Bradford. Entering into these territories where you're just dealing with raw numbers, just like, hey, what kind of terms are we coming up with? It feels like almost apples to oranges in terms of where you were with the rookie contract to something of this nature.
This thing is going to be... it's going to be interesting, right? He has, knock on wood, has not been hurt yet. He did win a road playoff game where they came from behind, you know. So the things that everyone said they were worried about, there has been a ceiling. Right? Clearly has been a ceiling to so far. And, you know, like, look, the issue with Lamar Jackson is going to be, has he been great? Yeah, he's been very, very good. Very, very good. But can he be this good and this productive? And you feel they have Super Bowl. They've had a Super Bowl defense around him. Can they continue to have a Super Bowl defense when he has that contract? That's the big question. And some of that's going to come down to the structuring of the deal. And I love you, Mom, but I need a professional for this one.
Well, that's the news.
And thanks for stopping by.
The Herdline News.
A new rule in the NFL is the inspiration for our great Best for Last. It's next in The Herd.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Hey, it's Ben, host of The Fifth Hour with Ben Maller, along with my trusty sidekick, David Gascon. Would mean a lot to have you join us on our weekly auditory journey. You're asking, what in God's name is The Fifth Hour? I'll tell you, it's a spinoff of The Ben Maller Show, a cult hit overnights on FSR. Why should you listen? Picture, if you will, a world where we chat with captains of industry in media, sports, and more every week. Explore some amazing facts about human nature and more. Listen to The Fifth Hour with Ben Maller on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Summer's here. Get active. Shed pounds with M-Drive Boost and Burn, the supplement that helps you look and feel good. Visit mdriveformen.com for shipping and 60-day guarantee. Refind your prime with M-Drive. I love this portion of the show. It's something we got in our back pocket and usually something fun. In this case, I don't know if you guys saw this. So it's not going to happen this year. It's going to happen next year. Next year. Next year, the NFL will be able to go back to those throwback uniforms. Obviously, it's like Spaceballs, right? The quest for more money. I mean, they're the draft combine, which is among the boringest things on earth to actually attend in person, they're going to sell that probably to LA and to Vegas, maybe somewhere else. Let's get to the best for last.
It's almost the end of the show, but that doesn't mean we're phoning it in. Nope, we grind to the very last segment. It's time for best for last.
Okay, here's what we're going to do, okay? The 10 best throwback helmets. 10 best throwback helmets. This is not really a staff discussion. This is a Doug Gottlieb discussion. Do we have the number 10? Do we have that number 10? Number 10. There we go. The Bengals with Bengals on the side. You're like, wait, what? Yeah, the Bengals, before they had the Bengal stripes, which is cool and iconic helmet, and just the whole thing fits, they used to have orange with just Bengals written on the side in block letters. It's kind of like a mid-century modern. Like, it's kind of so plain and crisp and boring that it works. That it works. The Bengals with Bengals.
Number 9.
The Giants with Giants on the side. Now, part of it is, that's Mark Bavaro and Joe Morris and was it Phil McConkie? I remember McConkie. Phil Sims, Bill Parcells, Harry Carson, Lawrence Taylor, right? Like, the Giants were great when they had Giants on the side. It is, I like the NY Giant, which is actually kind of retro. They used to do it, and they went to Giants, and they came back. But I'm looking forward to Giants, the Giants on the side of the helmet.
Number 8.
The Dolphins helmet's essentially the same, except the Dolphins actually changed. There was a time when the Dolphin wore a helmet. You guys remember that? Right? And I think those are the helmets they wore back when Ace Ventura, Pet Detective, found the dolphin.
Number seven.
The Oilers, like, now there's two throwback Oilers helmets. There's the white one with the oil derrick. But the one I like is the baby blue, the love you blue, baby blue. Plus, it does still go with the Titans color scheme, right? And baby blue is my favorite color. The baby blue Oilers bonnet helmet with just a white oil derrick on the side. That's a good one.
Number 6.
The Kelly Green Eagles helmet. It's more of a color differentiation. Obviously the logo is slightly different, but it is a brighter. It is what was that guy? What was the movie about the guy who, like, almost like the NFL walk on? Was that Invincible? Is that what that was? Invincible. All right. Yeah, that's Eagles Kelly Green. We'll put that one in.
Number 5.
Seahawks silver helmet. Seahawks silver helmet. Okay, so there used to be a running back named Kurt Warner. And there's a lot of great players. All right, let's move it on.
Number 4.
Cowboys white helmet. All right, Tony Romo wore them. Those are kind of classic cool.
Number 3.
The Broncos with the D on the side. When Elway took them to 2 Super Bowls and they lost. Yeah, those are really cool helmets.
Number 2.
Patriot Pat. Right, back when they got stomped by the Bears in the Super Bowl. And then number 1?
Number 1.
Cream school uniforms, Bucko Bruce. It was so bad, it was cool, and unfortunately, we may not see Tom Brady in it. This may be his last year, or maybe he plays forever. Those are your top 10 retro helmets as graded by me, Doug Gottlieb. All right, listen. To recap, you're not always better because you have better players. Tonight, I like Milwaukee. Bigly. Have a wonderful weekend. Colin's back Monday. I'm Doug Gottlieb. This is The Herd.